Welcome to Season 4 of The Farcast, bringing you experts and insiders every week to help you navigate the economic and investing landscape. Now, here's your host, Michael Farr.
Welcome to The Farcast. I am Michael Farr. We're so glad you're back with us every week. Thanks so much, too, for the notes and texts and emails we've been getting, not only from folks here in the U.S., but from folks around the world. Always very touched to hear what you think. And we appreciate your suggestions, too. Today is October the 7th, and we have vice presidential debates tonight. The president has been, of course, to Walter Reed. He is back in the White House. He seems hale and hearty and recovering apace. Markets look like they got a pretty good slap in the face yesterday when the president decided that he was pulling his team back from these stimulus talk negotiations with folks on Capitol Hill. And then late last night, he said, well, maybe we'll do parts of it. So this unpredictable president continues to be unpredictable. And investors are trying to figure out what they should be doing with their money as they look at markets, this upcoming election, a stimulus bill. We still have this international situation with China. We don't know what's going on in the Middle East. Britain is shutting down. For all of this, we turn to our three experts this morning. A terrific Farcast for you with Jim Labenthal coming up right first in segment one. Dan Mahaffey, boy, what are we going to talk about with Dan? See if we can find something to talk with Dan about what's going on in Washington. And then from the Navy Federal Credit Union, the senior economist, chief economist, Bob Frick. They have, I think, one of the largest memberships of any credit union in the country. And they get to see on a granular level what's going on with regular Joe America and Jane America. And we're going to hear from Bob Frick. He has some concerns and some special concerns he wants to share with us this morning about veterans. So without a whole lot more intro, Jim Labenthal is a partner at Cerity Partners. He manages U.S. equity portfolios for clients, advises them on asset allocation, contributes to their investment outlook as a member of the investment committee, and of course is a contributor at CNBC, is the star of the halftime report at noon. Don't tell Scott Wapner. Welcome back, Jim Labenthal.
Thank you for that. Thank you for that chuckle right out of the gate.
Michael, don't tell, we won't, be with you. We won't tell Josh either that you're the real star. We won't tell Wapner and Josh that you're the star, but everybody knows, Jim.
Michael, I love coming on the show, and it's not just because of the intro that you give me, although that is certainly gravy on the plate.
Well, thank you. We're glad you do it, and our listeners really benefit. Jim, we saw markets tank yesterday, and futures are up almost 250 points this morning here on the Dow Jones before we open. What do you make of all of this volatility that seems to be, you know, Capitol Hill driven in a lot of ways?
I think we all expected it. I mean, I can't think of a portfolio manager in equities that didn't expect October to be volatile. And so we're getting it. And what you're supposed to do here is you're supposed to look to the other side of this volatility. You're supposed to look into 2021 and see and believe that we will have a stimulus bill, we'll have a president, and we will also probably have progress, meaningful progress, if not completion of a vaccine for COVID. You put all that together, and that's a powerful recipe for 2021 to be fabulous. What I don't want people doing is overreacting to this volatility. You know, some people out there saying, oh, I'm getting nervous, I should move all the cash. Please don't. It makes my heart break when I hear that. You need to stay invested, folks. You need to stay invested.
You sound reasonably bullish this morning, Jim. I mean, that you're think that 2021 is going to be a good year. So even if I'm investing at 27,000, wherever we are, 700 this morning, I mean, that's still near the all-time highs in markets, that I could still buy the S&P today and have a decent 2021. Is that what you're thinking?
I think you could have a decent 2021, but more importantly, I think you can have a decent first half to this decade. And I think that's the main point I'm driving at. If you look at a 70-year chart or any multi-decade chart of the S&P 500, you will realize that volatility like what we're going through right now doesn't even show up on the chart, and that the chart slopes upward to the right. And you want to take advantage of that over many, many years. So don't get thrown from the horse in this garden variety volatility.
Very wise advice from my friend Jim Labenthal. And I think, too, you know, it kind of echoes Farr's advice that time and timing make not timing makes money in the markets. It's time. It's not timing. Timing will take you asunder most every time. Jim, I had a an idea that I shared on CNBC. Was I on Tuesday, Monday? Maybe I was on Monday. Anyway, and what I said was that I thought markets had just given a pretty ringing endorsement of a Biden presidency. And Tyler Matheson almost fell out of his chair when I said it. He said, "You what?" And I said, "Well, look, Tyler, over the weekend, we got word after the close Friday that Vice President Biden was showing a 14% lead in national polls. At the same time, the president was hospitalized. His campaign has been sidelined. Advantage Biden, and markets are up 300 or 400 points on Monday. I would have expected markets to be down 1,000 points if they were really scared of a Biden agenda. You saw clear advantage Biden on Monday and markets rally. Now, yes, we were anticipating a stimulus bill, but markets have been anticipating that for a while. Yes, we were certainly pleased that the president's health seemed to be not as dire as it could be with COVID, but it was a shift in that Biden advantage that then the markets were okay with it. What do you think? Am I out of my mind?
I don't think you're out of your mind. I think that's a reasonable analysis of what the markets did this week. And, you know, it really goes back to the point that I just made a second ago of don't worry about the short-term noise. Now, what I mean by that is, let's just say that Joe Biden wins, and more importantly, let's say that the Senate turns Democratic, which is sort of creeping up in the probabilities.
Yes.
We think we know anyway, that we're going to get higher taxes, higher regulations. Those are the sorts of things that may and probably will knock the market down in November and December. But here's the key point. The markets and the economy will adjust to whatever policies and regulations come out, just like they did in the Obama presidency, just like they did in the Bush presidency. The market is always throwing things or having things thrown at it. And presidential policies are just something that it will adjust to. Goes back to my point. Be looking through this period, all right? Swing through the pitch. In your backswing, you should be looking at 2021 through 2025. And I think we're going to be growing from here.
Moody's Analytics actually did a report analyzing the two candidates, presidential candidates, economic plans. And granted, and this was led by Mark Zandi. Mark Zandi, I think, I'd like to know what you think. I mean, clearly a very bright guy and a very good economist. I think he tends more to the liberal side of things. I mean, when I think about Mark, but his analysis showed that the economy would actually over the next 5 or 10 years probably do better, and certainly a couple of 3 years do better under Biden than it would with Trump. Though he did say it's tough to figure out exactly what the Trump economic agenda is because it's kind of all over the place at times.
I think the last sentence you said is the most important thing. And it's the it's the reason, without trying to be inflammatory, I think it's the reason why a number of Republicans are willing to vote against their economic self-interests and vote for Joe Biden. It's because they really don't know what the plan is from the president right now. We know that he's for lower taxes and less regulation, and he wants to, you know, strangle China. That's all great, but the path by which he gets there, as we've seen in the last 4 years, has been disruptive. It's been chaotic. It's been very difficult for investors and professionals to actually stick with a plan through the last 4 years. When you wake up any morning and you don't know what you're going to get, are you going to get more tariffs? Are you going to get sanctions? Are you going to get a military action? There is not a coherent plan that you can really march to. And it's so disruptive that a number of Republicans that I know are willing to bet against their economic self-interests, at least for the next 4 years, to get some stability in the government.
You know what? We have there's a clip on the halftime report on the desk just before we went on. This was a couple of years ago. And they came into our IFBs and are these earpieces that we have in and told us something that the president had just said just before we went on the air. And I looked up just shocked and said, "He said what?" And they they've sent me that clip two or three times that has me looking up just stunned saying, he said, what? And I felt that way yesterday when I heard that he had said that he was canceling all the negotiations on stimulus. I mean, my reaction was, well, he must not want to be reelected president. I mean, why would he do that? And then at 10 o'clock last night, he reversed it again. And for all we know, he could reverse it again in the next 10 minutes. It's and what's a girl to do, as the old line used to say here? I mean, investors with their money, this is tough to hang on and get through, isn't it?
It's no way to live a life. It just isn't. But, you know, life doesn't have to be this hard. I share the president's goals economically. I really, really do.
Yes, I do, too.
Economically, the path by which he is getting to them is indeterminate. It's not a path through the woods. It's a walk through the thistle bushes.
Yes. And I'm not, when I say I do, I think I do, to the extent that I understand the president's policies. But I mean, to the extent that I am a capitalist and a free market capitalist, that is a and a fiscal conservative. If the president's those things, then I agree with him. if he's not, I don't. Jim, we are almost out of time here, and there's one specific example. I met with some clients this week, some new prospective clients who are indeed, thank you, Lord, signing up with us, and they had a portfolio they had been directing and buying lots of dividend stocks, anything with over sort of an 8% dividend in this environment. They wanted to buy more Exxon because it has a 10% dividend. Have you seen people who really focus on dividend stocks my experience is they get into trouble because high dividends are an indicator of risk when they're too high. But can you talk to us about those?
I think that's exactly the problem, is it can be an indication of risk. So if you look at where the high dividends are right now, it's the telecoms like Verizon and AT&T, it's the energy stocks, it's the material stocks, the industrials. And for a lot of those names, you're getting a dividend, but if you take the energy stocks as an example, you're losing more in share price declines than you're getting in the dividends. To take a more benign example, in the telecom stocks, you're getting the dividends and no price appreciation, which is fine if that's what you want, but just don't cry when you see the NASDAQ 100 up 40% in a year. I want to add one short-term thing here that is on my mind, because I see a lot of stocks that I think really are quality with much higher dividends than the market has. I think the market has been saying for the last 6 months that it expects dividend cuts as a result of the recession. Right. Those dividend cuts now with as much stimulus as we've had and probably are still going to get, I don't think those dividend cuts are going to come. So be selective, but just bear in mind, this is not where you're going to get NASDAQ 100-like returns.
It's also a place where I think professional advice is really helpful. I mean, when this one client said, well, I really want to buy Exxon because the dividend's up at 10%. And we pointed out we have an energy analyst at Farr Miller in Washington who said, you know, they're going to have to borrow money. They're going to have to issue bonds to keep paying that dividend. Do you think that's a good idea? I mean, they don't have the cash flow to do it. I mean, that's different from other companies, and you need to understand whether that dividend's secure and whether they have the cash flow to support it, in my opinion. What do you think, Jim?
Well, ExxonMobil comes up quite a bit in these sorts of discussions.
Yes.
And unfortunately, I'm going to be very stock specific here. I am negative on ExxonMobil for a very specific reason. They bought XTO Energy, whenever that was, 10, 12 years ago, enterprise value of around $40 billion. And they're carrying most of that at their purchase cost on the balance sheet. That's unreasonable in light of what energy prices have done. I think at some point they're going to have to write those assets down quite a bit. I think their aggressive accounting is going to bite them in the butt. And, you know, that's going to hurt their balance sheet. It's going to hurt their borrowing ability. At the very least, it's going to move up their interest costs. So I'm negative on ExxonMobil.
And I'll tell you, Michael Wirth is the CEO of Chevron, is on CNBC on Squawk Box this morning. He's been on for quite a while. Do you lump them both together? I look at looking at Chevron, it has a 7% dividend, a little bit, substantially lower than Exxon's.
I think Chevron is the easiest way to have a toehold in energy, and I own it. The dividend is obviously above market. The balance sheet is strong, and it's just the easiest way to be tied to an energy recovery when and if that happens. Right now, energy is about 2.5% of the S&P 500, so you don't have to take a large position in it just to be at the market weight, but I do own Chevron, and I'm quite happy holding it.
Jim Labenthal is a partner at Cerity Partners. He manages U.S. equity portfolios. He contributes to their investment outlook. He's on CNBC regularly. Take it off of mute. Listen to Jim Labenthal, one of the wisest and nicest guys you're going to ever hear on Wall Street. We're going to be right back with Dan Mahaffey talking about Washington, the tonight's debate, and what all of this different changing leads in the polls is going to mean in the presidential race when we come back on the Farcast.
Thank you for joining us on this week's Farcast. We'd like to invite you to follow Michael on Twitter and LinkedIn. On his social media feed, you'll find links to all of Michael's media appearances, articles he's been quoted in such newspapers as The Wall Street Journal and Washington Post, and of course, the Farcast. Additionally, Michael shares some of the articles we are reading at Farmiller in Washington every morning that we feel have bearing on the investing landscape. That's Michael_K_Farr on Twitter, and Michael Farr on LinkedIn. And now, back to Michael and the Farcast. Welcome back to the Farcast. And now here's your host, Michael Farr.
We are back. Thanks so much for being with us again this week. Jim Labenthal from Cerity Partners, what a terrific segment and great insights from Jim. Now, as we cover Wall Street, Washington, and the world, we turn to Washington and our own Dan Mahaffey, senior political analyst for the Farcast now into season four, and also the director of policy at the Center for the Study of the Presidency and Congress, a Washington-based think tank. Dan has expertise in security issues and in China. He studied in China. He is an insider's insider, nonpartisan, to bring us insights every week. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning, Michael. Always studying the presidency and Congress so you don't have to.
Well, and who wants to, really?
I know. Look away from.
Not only do I not have to, I don't want to, but
I feel like it's at the end of that Indiana Jones where it's just like, look away, as everyone's face is melting.
We're getting to that point. Yesterday afternoon, Dan, now that the president has returned back to the White House since you and I last spoke on air, returned back to the White House, seems as if he's recovering well. Thank goodness. We certainly wish the president of the United States the very best in terms of health and wellness. And as I've said for years, I think every American should say a prayer for the president of the United States, no matter who he or she happens to be at the moment, that we have the best president and that that president will do the best job for this country every day they are in office. And I certainly pray that for Donald Trump, that he will do the very best job he can for this country every day he's in office. He came out yesterday and said that he was pulling out of the talks for the next stimulus bill that the Federal Reserve has been begging for. And politicos in Washington have been telling us is kind of critical politically for both sides, but probably more critical for the president's own bid to get reelected. What did he do and why? I mean, my thought, Dan, at the moment was, gosh, doesn't he want to get reelected? Why would he do that?
Well, Michael, I'm going to make what you said about the president. I'll secularize it a little bit. And I've always said, when you're in an airplane, you root for the pilot.
Yeah, I like
and,
that. Yeah.
And what's going on, though, right now is a lot of people in the plane are wondering why the plane is in a nosedive in a fog bank headed towards the ground.
And do you think that's what this campaign's doing? Or do you think
the concern coming out of Republicans now about how this is looking and the way their internal numbers are moving in some ways, particularly post the debate, the way he acted there, post his COVID diagnosis. Let's first think through, Michael, the month of history that unfolded in the past week since we talked.
Yes.
We've looked at the impact of that debate, the way Trump behaved during that debate. And interestingly, the polling after the debate showed his support Donald Trump's support among senior citizens and women voters collapse. The two most reliable demographics that go to the polls in America, support for Donald Trump is collapsing among them.
Senior citizens?
Senior citizens and women. And for example, two polls after the debate showed Biden up by 20 to 25% among seniors.
Wow. 20 to 25%.
That is a demographic that Republicans have carried by 10 to 15 points or high single digits in the last four elections.
Ladies and gentlemen, let me just point out one thing. If you watch the debates, if you're following this, if you read about the debates, and you listen to Dan say something like that and say, I don't like that he just said that. That's not sense. I saw that debate, and I think Donald Trump won that debate, and Dan Mahaffey is just wrong. Ladies and gentlemen, you're not hearing Dan Mahaffey's opinion. This is not Dan's opinion of what he saw. Dan's simply reporting to you the polls and the response of study groups that came out afterwards. So whether you like the numbers or you don't like the numbers he's reporting, these aren't Dan created numbers. These are the numbers, and Dan is telling us about them. And that information really is important, I think, as you think about the calculus. Dan, what changed for women and what changed for seniors in that debate? I'm not sure that as I think about the debates, which I watched completely, that debate, I'm not sure what I would have seen as a senior or as a woman that would have been so off-putting. What was it?
The way that Trump came across as truly a bully to Joe Biden, the interrupting, the hectoring, the decorum of that was so unpresidential to a lot of people in the focus groups. This, we have to remember, unlike a person like me who follows this daily, the debates, the State of the Union, those are the high events of American politics that people only turn into occasionally.
Yes.
And Trump had always been very professional. He understood how to do States of the Union. He was focused. You could always tell there was a different tone. Not this debate. He came off as hectoring and bullying in the focus groups. And among women, the way he approached the Biden family, that tragedy, the way he addressed that, turned that off. And then follow up on that, as we're starting to see the polling unfold from the weekend and his diagnosis, women have always been the most concerned about his handling of coronavirus. The public support for his handling of coronavirus is roughly now 30%, even lower in some key swing states. And as long as coronavirus is the news and the presidential character, everyone is the numbers are turning away from him.
And I misspoke there. I said on behalf of those two cohorts, I wasn't sure what was so off-putting. I found the whole thing off-putting, actually. I was just wondering sort of specifically what may have affected those two groups. No, I found the whole thing just awful.
Yeah, and those were the key moments, and particularly the handling of Biden's son and the issues, too, of let's not forget across many of the Rust Belt states, the issues that have been had with addiction in those communities.
Oh, yeah.
And the way Trump spoke about that.
Yes.
If you are a mother who has had a child deal with addiction, a grandmother who has adopted kids because your children are in jail of opioids, across those states, that is a crisis. And the way he spoke of addiction really rubbed a lot of people the wrong way, too. It was a complete mess. And Republicans now, and this is where I think about the probabilities, Republicans now are telling me we're seeing Senate seats in Montana and Iowa become competitive. Martha McSally in Arizona, the debate last night, I bet you she wishes she was back in her A-10 cockpit because at least there was some armor plating for her there. These are all, she was being hammered by the moderators, are you proud of your support for Donald Trump? She couldn't give a clear answer on that in a primary as a Republican senator running for re-election. So Arizona, we'll talk about North Carolina, where that's gotten a little steamier, though. But look, and if we have a free and fair election in Georgia, I think that state's in play.
So, Dan, we're looking around, and this is kind of, I guess, made the Senate a little bit more, in your opinion, more likely to go blue. Our friend Greg Valliere overnight, as you just mentioned, North Carolina, was widely assumed to be where Senator, GOP Senator Tom Tillis had looked shaky. That race now has a sex scandal. Democrat Cal Cunningham sent racy emails to a campaign worker, and now the reports they tried to cover up a relationship, and Cunningham has apologized. That sort of thing doesn't play well in North Carolina. So could it be that the Senate might keep one Republican seat as an advantage?
Look, it's still within the realm of plausibility that you have that. I would not rule that out. The trends... And to be honest, the speed with which they want to confirm Amy Coney Barrett suggests to me a blue Senate is on the way.
What do you make of the vice presidential debate tonight? What's at stake there?
I think it's a final chance for the Trump campaign to at least try to staunch the bleeding. Pence has always been a very capable debater, a very capable communicator to put a softer edge on a lot of the administration's policies. I don't know how much more he can be able to do that. And we'll see how Kamala Harris handles being a prosecutor, but not seen as hectoring her debate opponent.
I was sitting outside at a restaurant last night, Laurie and I, and people came over to tell me that they thought I looked very much like Vice President Pence, and were we related? I hadn't seen that before, actually. There's something just to being, you know, 6 feet tall with white hair, I think. That kind of must be it, but I'd never thought about the Vice President Pence lookalike before.
Well, you didn't turn to Laurie and call her mother, though, right?
Didn't Reagan call Nancy mommy? I think it was mommy.
Right. Yeah.
Mother. But it all works. As you look at this stimulus bill that Jay Powell has been pushing for, that Neil Kashkari was on CNBC this morning as one of the Fed presidents pushing for, economists pretty much across the board are saying, pay attention to the economy. We need this. This bridge is 80% built across this huge economic chasm, and 80% of a bridge doesn't solve a problem for anybody. We need this. This sort of looks like a tone-deaf move politically, but are we going to get anything before the election? Is there
why listen to them when you can bring out Moore and Art Laffer to tell you the spending won't do anything?
I hope you bring them out a lot, because everybody else is saying that the spending will do a whole lot. But then the president reversed himself last night and suggested the $1,200 stimulus check and support for the airlines. Does that have a chance of getting through? And is that sort of an outreach saying, I still want some money for these two groups? Is that sort of enough of a sympathetic, empathetic comment that could bring the president some more support?
I don't think it's overshadowed by his first blow up of the negotiations, first and foremost, which we also have to read, in my mind, as back in charge maneuver, consequences be damned. Mnuchin, Meadows, I'm back in the Oval Office. We're done with the negotiations. And I think, too, it's the regret of now blowing that up and seeing what has happened with the markets, what he's probably heard from Republicans in competitive races around the country about what they're seeing. And then you have the final fact that the market, his favorite metric, was down. And you say, okay, can you do this piecemeal approach before the election? I highly doubt it, and I think the only way we see stimulus before January is if things get truly dire and Congress passes something in the lame duck with a veto-proof majority.
Dan, if I look forward to 2021, I said earlier in segment one that I thought that Monday's rally, after we saw Vice President Biden go so far ahead in the polls and the president in the hospital and sidelined from campaigning, advantage Biden, and the market rallied. I would have expected a market and Wall Street fearful of Biden economic proposals and new taxes and everything else that we've been hearing they're scared about would have been down 1,000 points. That's mm-hmm. what you would expect. They weren't down 1,000 points. They rallied, which was a message that Wall Street voting with its wallet saying we're not worried about having a Biden administration. We haven't seen that yet. So you need to listen to Wall Street on these votes. What do you think about a 2021 political agenda? What's the Washington agenda as you get into 2021 for either a President Trump or President Biden?
Well, it's going to be coronavirus, and the economy is the top three issues I think that you're going to see in the 2021 agenda for either one. Interestingly enough, you talked about that blue wave in the economy. We talked about the Moody's report on what a blue wave would do. Goldman coming out and saying they think a blue wave would be good for the economy as well. So the fourth branch of government at Goldman Sachs has weighed in on their view. Beyond that, you have the factors of, look, the country is going to be so divided. What can you do if Trump wins? What kind of unrest do we see in the cities? If Biden wins, what do Trump supporters do in rural areas, or his true adherents come out? So there's going to be a need to figure out how to bind this country back together in some way and get past our tribalization. And then finally, the only agenda that I think you need to be concerned about, you know, you're going to see a ton of stimulus push if you do have that blue wave. But I would be concerned, and I think it's been lost in a lot of this hubbub, how both parties are now starting to look at big tech after seeing the House report on big tech monopoly power, that both parties have no love for the big tech companies. So that would be where I'd be most concerned about the economy either way in 2021.
Interesting. That should be very scary to Wall Street, given that it's been the FANG stocks that have driven the performance, that have been the plow mules, that have been pulling the wagon, the market wagon for the past few years. And yet futures this morning on that news is out about sort of the threat of monopolies and big tech and breaking it up and so on. Futures are up over 250 points and continue strong today. We'll see if they're just not paying attention to that news yet when they finally focus, or whether they don't think that's a real threat as we go forward. Dan Mahaffey is the director of policy at the Center for the Study of the Presidency and Congress, is our senior political analyst on the Farcast. Dan, thanks. And we can't wait for next week and a post-debate review and see if we can find anything to talk about next week.
I'm sure we'll be at a loss for words.
At a loss for words once again. We're going to be right back, ladies and gentlemen, with Navy Federal Credit Union senior economist Robert Frick, great friend of the Farcast, telling us what he's seeing among their thousands and thousands and thousands of credit union members, with a special message for veterans when we come back on the Farcast. Please stay with us.
The Farcast is sponsored in part by Positano Restaurante in Bethesda, Maryland, 4940 Fairmont Avenue. Positano Restaurant, great Italian food. And now, back to the show, and your host, Michael Farr. Thank you for joining us on the Farcast. And now, back to your host, Michael Farr.
We are back. Thanks so much for being with us. Terrific Farcast, listening to Jim Labenthal and, of course, Dan Mahaffey's insights as to what's happening on Capitol Hill, the Senate race, the discussion over stimulus or the lack thereof, and the implications for Wall Street. Wall Street doesn't seem to care, folks. Wall Street, when they looked at that lead in the polls, the big jump in the polls for Vice President Biden over the weekend and President Trump in the hospital and sidelined from campaigning, still rallied on Monday. The likelihood of a Joe Biden presidency increased over the weekend, and markets were okay with it. Pay attention to what the markets say as this calculus changes. Today, we're still seeing market futures head higher. So as we try to figure out economically and what the broader world is thinking about all of this, we turn to an old Farcast friend, Robert Frick. Bob Frick is corporate economist for the world's largest credit union, Navy Federal Credit Union, serving the military and their families. He provides economic expertise as it relates to core businesses, including home and consumer and auto lending and credit cards, all of these things that deal with Joe and Jane, American. Bob Frick is right there leading that messaging and analysis. Welcome to the Farcast, Bob.
Oh, Michael, thank you very much. Great to be back, especially on so auspicious a week.
Well, it is an auspicious week. We've heard the Federal Reserve Chairman asking, pleading for Congress to actually to do something and pass additional stimulus. We heard Neel Kashkari, a Federal Reserve President, saying the same thing this morning on CNBC. What do you make of the state of the economy? Positive, negative, recovering, in good shape and bad shape? What's the view from Navy Federal Credit Union?
We're in okay shape. We're eking along, and the expansion is going to continue from our perch. We see, you know, good consumer spending, but obviously we see some deep pain. Our membership reflects the economy at large, and as it happens right now, we're really parsing what we call member journeys, which means we're interviewing a lot of members, asking them how they're doing, and what is it going to take to help them get their finances in better order? And as you can imagine, a lot of them are struggling.
So tell us how, Bob. I mean, we know people are struggling around. What will it take for those folks who are struggling to get their finances in better order?
I don't know if you've ever been in a glider.
I have not.
grew up in State College, Pennsylvania, which is actually where I am right now. And there used to be a pretty big glider port here. And if you can just follow the Allegheny Ridge, you can glide for 1,000 miles. The
wow.
problem is, yeah, it's pretty cool. And I've not done the 1,000, but I've gone a long way. The problem is when you try and jump to another updraft and so you can continue gliding, sometimes you end up landing in fields, you know, maybe a dirt road if you're lucky. The problem is right now is our updraft is essentially cut off. We have a very mild breeze that's keeping the economy going. And we were counting on stimulus to provide that updraft until we could reach, you know, the next ridge, which would be a vaccine. So right now we're in weak shape and we just hope that basically right now it's just the grit of American entrepreneurship is keeping things going.
So as we look to what the government is doing or isn't doing, if you have a message for Congress, what's that message to Congress and our political leadership?
Well, I'm only going to speak for myself personally, since I don't speak politically for the credit union. But economically speaking,
yes.
I'm right there with Kashkari and Chairman Powell. If we don't have this bridge loan, essentially, if we don't have this temporary updraft, what we're going to see is more permanent damage done to the economy, which is what we're seeing right now. It played out in full force in September, and it's only going to get worse.
We've been hearing about a K-shaped recovery where the sort of top folks, of wealthier folks, top 10% are doing fine, and the top bottom percent and the bottom, you know, 90% are going lower. Is that a reasonable description, this K-shaped recovery? And how do we, I guess, get the lower leg of the K in an upward slope? How do we get that moving away from that decline?
Again, I think it's going to be vaccine dependent. I mean, the two big legs in the economy are a vaccine and stimulus. Since it looks like we're not going to be getting the stimulus anytime soon, I think the markets, and as you know, I covered the markets and wrote about investments for many years. I think basically the markets are discounting a vaccine at this point and looking forward to the point when the economy can recover because we get more immunity. But as far as lower income Americans go, if
yes.
you're in a couple industries, you know, hospitality, restaurants and all, your prospects are dim. What's interesting to me is that retailing has recovered as well as it has. So we're seeing kind of some isolation of industries, I think, and this really isn't lower income Americans, but there's a big knockoff effect of manufacturing jobs. If manufacturing
yes.
can pick
yes.
up, then for every one manufacturing job, there are 5 service jobs. And
right.
that's going to be a big help to, you know, again, the K-shaped recovery. I'm going to introduce the E-shaped recovery, okay? You have the bottom leg going down, middle America flat, and, you know, upper income people, you know, doing better. The problem is, and Michael, you and I have discussed this a lot, we're in a demand problem. And
yes,
when people in the lower incomes get money, they spend it. So
yes,
if they get stimulus, and I'm all for stimulus really targeted to people who've lost their jobs and are lower income Americans, that is a direct shot of adrenaline to the economy, which can keep us going till spring, summer, when we can get immunity.
We had one of our guests who I used the analogy of building a bridge 80% across the deep economic chasm. 80% of a bridge is a nice idea, but it doesn't help you much, right? So it's another way of looking for that next updraft. Bob, I want to ask a couple, got three more questions for you.
Mm-hmm.
Health of the banking system, Navy Federal Credit Union has lots of depositors. What do you see as the health of the banking system now? The banks aren't allowed to be doing stock buybacks now or increasing their dividends. Some are restricted from dividends. The Fed seems to be a little bit concerned and has the brakes, has a governor on a lot of the banks. Are you concerned?
As far as commercial banks, I'm a little concerned. As far as credit unions in general, not really, because low interest rates are a real boon to credit unions. As far as Navy Federal, we are doing just fine. And that's because people are refinancing their mortgages and our auto business is doing really well.
Why are you concerned about commercial banks?
Well, we're seeing a lot of bankruptcies, and we're seeing, and that's only going to increase, especially commercial banks that loan to small and intermediate-sized businesses. They're going to have write-offs. I don't think there's any question of that.
So it's not the banks themselves that are going bankrupt. It's the folks to whom they loan money that are having financial difficulty, and if they can't repay those loans, the banks will ultimately suffer. Am I interpreting that right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And so, again, I think you're going to see some banks' bottom lines hurt a little bit. On the other hand, Fed has set the table as best it can, and the banks are going to do okay. I'm not worried about banks.
As I'm looking at jobs in this recovery, college-educated folks, folks with a bachelor's degree, pretty much have recovered where they were in the job market. Minority women have seen pretty much 12% of those jobs disappear. Both Black women and Hispanic women, the jobs are gone. Also, you know, the economically, when we look at that, a lot of minority women are actually more likely to be breadwinners in those households. So there's a heavier impact. What are you seeing in terms of job recovery, and what's the effect on veterans through this period?
Those are two good questions. And the first question is, when we look at things like, well, our imports are doing really well, or that shows that we're consuming a lot, and our retail buying has returned to what it was pre-pandemic, great. You know, I'm all for that. On the other hand, where's our heart when we see, you know, people of color are so much worse off than we are? Certainly, Chairman Powell picks up on that and is very concerned with it. And one of the things, I was rereading The Plague, Camus, which I think is a great book and very instructive on human behavior. There's a quote that stuck with me: what's true of all the evils in the world is true of plague as well. It helps men to rise above themselves. And we really need to rise above ourselves. Really need to rise above ourselves and take care of these communities that are so hard off. And again, Powell's on top of this. We need to be on top of it too.
We need to rise above it. Tell us about veterans and the effect on veterans and what you're seeing. Navy Federal Credit Union certainly dealing with a lot of its members are vets.
Yeah, and active duty. And what's a good news story is the veterans unemployment rate is down to around 6.4%. And they never lost nearly as many jobs. I mean, veterans are great employees. Everyone knows that. They tend to do well at their jobs. They tend to hold their jobs for a long time. They tend to do a lot of education. So this is good. But remember, I mentioned manufacturing.
Yes.
A lot of vets work in manufacturing, and there's still about 700,000 vets unemployed versus 10 months ago. So we would love to see manufacturing do better and construction, even though construction is doing pretty well, so more vets can get their jobs back.
It looks like now that the Democrats really somehow have become the pro-trade sort of party. The Republicans have really been much more America only, isolationists a bit. I wouldn't say necessarily xenophobic, but Democrats sort of have been pushed into this, you know, corner of being pro-trade where they've got a lot of labor union support. And I sort of have this sense, and I talk to folks on Capitol Hill, elected Democratic officials, that they kind of ended up here and they're not sure how.
Right.
Is there a political side to domestic jobs that you all pay attention to at all?
No, I mean, the credit union does not look at that. I mean, we are solely focused on the welfare of our members. And, you know, by proxy, that means the welfare of the American economy. But let me just say, I think there's a middle ground on trade. And you see other countries do it better than we do. They do protect some industries. And I think at least protecting them to the point that people can be let down easy. I think that's important. But, yep. Free trade is a marvelous engine. Capitalism is a marvelous engine, and free trade fuels a lot of that.
Okay, finally, Bob, what's keeping you awake at night? What are you concerned about for the economy as we go through the next 3, 6, 9, 12 months here?
Obviously, the vaccine. That's the number one thing. And, I worry about that economically. I worry about it personally because I'm in State College, Pennsylvania right now, and COVID is going crazy at Penn State, which is right across the street. So it's kind of a reminder to me of what's going on. The thing that I really worry about, besides getting the numbers down, is, obviously stimulus. We need to get a stimulus package. Beyond that, I want to make sure that small business does well. I think small business is going to do better than people think because we have all these filings for new businesses. But, when a small business goes out of business, it's a tremendous financial hit to the owner. And it's something that they can't recover from, and they become employees as opposed to owners.
Yes.
Now, when people go from owners to employees, all of a sudden they stop creating jobs.
Yes.
So small business is probably number three on my list.
Robert Frick from the Navy Federal Credit Union and one of the greatest guys we get to talk to on the Farcast. One of the nicest and brightest guys in the business, and certainly has a purview and view into a huge swath of the American population. We get such great insights when you're on. Bob, thanks so much for being with us this week.
Thank you, Michael.
Well, we hope you'll come back with us, Bob. Ladies and gentlemen, we hope you'll be back with us again next week, too. We will be back, and we thank you so much for staying with us and listening to us on this week's Farcast. Please share us on social media. We're having a listener campaign here this fall coming into this election. We've got more news, more updates, and more experts for you coming back next week. I'm grateful to each and every one of you. Thank you so much for the Farcast. I'm Michael Farr.
Thank you for joining us on this week's Farcast, and a special thanks to Michael's guests, Jim Labenthal, Dan Mahaffey, and Robert Frick from Navy Federal Credit Union. The Farcast is produced by Michael Farr and Harry Jennings and is available for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and all major podcast platforms. We'd love to hear from you. You can reach us at hjennings@farmiller.com. Let us know what you like, any questions you may have, and topics you'd like to hear us cover in coming weeks. The Farcast podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be considered legal or financial advice. The information, statements, comments, views, and opinions provided in this podcast are general in nature, and such information, statements, comments, views, and opinions should not be construed as the provision of investment advice by Farr, Miller & Washington or the firm represented by any of our guests. And we would like to remind you that past performance is not a guide to the future performance of any index, fund, manager, or strategy. Before you make any investment decision, we strongly recommend that you consult with an investment professional. And if we can be of assistance here at Farr, Miller & Washington, please feel free to reach out to me at hjennings@farrmiller.com. We are here to help, and I'll be happy to put any of our listeners in touch with one of our investment professionals for a complimentary review of your portfolio and your investment goals. Join us again next week as we bring you experts and insiders to help you navigate the economic landscape and investing environment. It's the Farcast, Wall Street, Washington, and the world.